Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, April 26th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, more squabbling over the budget at the Capitol and a man due to be sentenced today for shooting people at a Minneapolis protest. DFL Governor Mark Dayton and Republican House Speaker Kurt Dowd are squabbling over how to proceed on budget negotiations. Tim Pugmire reports.
After a private meeting with the governor and Republican Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka, Dowd accused Dayton of wasting time. Dowd said the governor's insistence that he won't come to the negotiation table until the House and Senate resolve their differences is reckless and irresponsible.
It's very obvious who gains leverage at the end if things get bunched up in the last few hours. The governor does. It's very obvious that the governor's strategy is to bunch things up in the last few hours at the end. I just don't think that's right.
Dayton said in a statement that Dowd's accusations are unfounded. He said he's made very clear his parameters for negotiating, including the need for one legislative position. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
It's been years since businessman Tom Petters and some associates landed in prison over a multi-billion dollar fraud scheme. But efforts to recover money for victims are still hung up in court, and Minnesota legislators are weighing a law change that could put some money out of reach. Brian Baxt has more.
The Ponzi scheme orchestrated by Tom Petters involved a staggering $3.7 billion, spanned 15 years, and affected more than 250 victims. The move to claw back some of that money has also been far-reaching. Businesses, investors, and charities have been forced to turn over money they gained from the scheme. But a few have resisted the recovery effort and now hope the legislature shields some of those assets. A couple paragraphs in a state budget bill could do just that. In the view of court-appointed receiver Doug Kelly, the law change could take $35 million off the table.
That would be borne not by the taxpayers, but by the victims of the Ponzi scheme.
Some charitable foundations or religious organizations received something other than cash from Petters or his associates. They got stock, bonds, or promissory notes that eventually resulted in lucrative returns. Among them is the Northwestern Foundation, which is affiliated with the University of Northwestern, a private Christian college in Roseville. Board member Grover Sayer explained to lawmakers how a promissory note donated to the foundation in 1999 ultimately yielded $5.5 million. That money came in by 2001 and was later parceled back out, well before the Petters case came to light.
So nearly 8 years went by after the funds were received and gone, before the foundation knew that there was a fraud involved.
The foundation has been dealt some setbacks as it fights recovery actions now before a bankruptcy judge.
If gifts from a long time ago are reclaimed from foundations, we create a new set of victims, namely all the folks that have donated the money that now will be used to pay the old claim, because often funds from old donations are long gone.
Sayer says the claim before the foundation is more than it has in existing assets. The legislation, which advocates say is merely a clarification to a 2012 law, could provide a lifeline. Doug Kelly says he's recouped millions of dollars from similarly situated charities, religious orders, and colleges.
This is akin to if somebody went out and robbed a bank and got the money and then went across the street and put it in the collection plate of a church. Everybody recognizes that money ought to go back to the original depositors in the bank.
Kelly says he's been clear from the outset he would be flexible in negotiated reduced settlements.
That if a charity could not afford to pay back the money, it had an inability to pay, I wasn't in the business of trying to put anybody out of business.
Meanwhile, lawmakers realize they're dealing with a complicated subject with big ramifications. But Senator Warren Limmer of Maple Grove advised his colleagues on a House Senate Conference Committee to keep a narrow scope.
We are not a court, and we can be tempted to make some moral judgments here. We're trying to straighten out the law.
It might not be known for weeks which side prevails in the legislature, and will have the upper hand when the debate moves back to the courts. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt at the Capitol.
Minnesotans concerned about climate change are gearing up for another march this weekend. Elizabeth Dunbar reports.
Six buses are headed to Washington, D.C. to participate in the People's Climate March. The first of the buses leaves today. Brian Novak is an organizer with Minnesota 350.
The People's Climate March is to let legislators know that we're watching all of the actions going on in Washington very closely, and we don't want to see reversals of the progress that we've made towards climate change.
Novak says he hopes the Trump administration decides against withdrawing from the Paris Climate Agreement of 2015. But activists are already concerned about the impact other policy moves could have on burning more coal and oil, further contributing to climate change. Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Later today, a Bloomington man, Alan Scarsella, will be sentenced for shooting and injuring five protesters in November of 2015. Dewahali Saikautau returned to North Minneapolis a few blocks from the crime scene to find out how folks are feeling there about the sentencing.
Jamar Clark protesters blocked the entrance of the 4th Police Precinct in Minneapolis for 18 days straight. On one of those nights, Alan Scarsella shot five black men, including Cameron Clark, one of Jamar Clark's cousins. He was shot in his right leg and foot. Yesterday, we met outside his home near a colorful playground.
Hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
You're looking good.
I'm doing all right. Yeah, my legs still been giving me problems.
Yeah? What kind of problems?
I can't stand up for too long.
Clark is visibly uncomfortable, massaging the sides of his injured leg while sitting on a picnic bench.
A couple days ago, I almost fell because my leg gave out on me. So, you know, I wake up every day, even though, you know, I'm still alive. But, you know, I think this is going to be like a life issue forever with the pain and the damage that happened to my leg.
A bullet missed his artery by half an inch. The night Clark got shot, he says, felt like a nightmare.
It's like a dream, but it's really true, though. Because I never think no white supremacists or anybody would have came down there and caused harm to us out of nonviolent protest. So it kind of shocked me.
He plans to offer testimony before Scarsella is sentenced today. But Clark also wants to ask,
what was the reason or who sent you down here to cause this harm? We was at a nonviolent protest, and you came down there to cause harm and you shot five black people. So I would just like to know, what was the reason and why? Me waking up every day, looking at my wound and the pain that I go through, it's really crazy.
At trial, a Burnsville police officer who grew up with Scarsella described him as believing that, quote, if you're black, you're bad. Clark says it didn't matter to him that Scarsella was racist or didn't like black people. It was the violence. He wants Scarsella to be sentenced at least 20 years.
And I believe they give him anything 10 or lower. White supremacy has a lot to do with it because I feel like he should be looking at like 20 or 25 to life. And I'm just surprised why he's not getting hit with premeditated murder. And how come the rest of his friends are not getting hit with the same charges? Because I know if it was me and a group of my friends and we committed a crime like that, they would have all charged us with the same crime and the case would have been over with by now.
58-year-old Roosevelt Pargo has lived in North Minneapolis for four decades. He was walking along Plymouth Avenue when I stopped him and asked him what he thought of the sentencing of Alan Scarsella.
He's just one of the ones they're making an example of. That's all. He got caught, and they knew who he was. Now, they might be sentenced to 15 years, but he'll probably be out in 3 or 4 on good behavior and all of that, and be released, and they'll sweep it up under the rug. And then it'll be the same old thing.
Pargo says not many people care about the sentencing of Scarsella because, in his words, blacks continue to be treated as second-class citizens, and the majority of police who walk these streets are white.
You let one of us go out there and shoot up a white protest, oh, they throw us out into jail. We ain't gonna get out. And that's just the honest truth. We ain't gonna get out. But now, mark my word, this is 2017. He'll probably be out by 2020. Early release, good behavior, ideal model prisoner, and all of that, you know. And then the story goes on. But that's the way the system is set up, though. And when you've lived long enough, you've seen enough, you recognize it for what it is. It's the same old double standard, that's all. There's them, and then there's us. And they get treated different, that's all.
Scarsella could be sentenced between 10 to 20 years. Dwahli Saikautau, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.